Welcome to the Male Fertility Podcast, a podcast designed to help, support and educate men as they go through their own fertility struggles. I'm Kieran.
And I'm Sean. And we'll do that by sharing our stories of what we went through, as well as having guests share their knowledge and experience. Right, let's get into today's episode. Hi, how you doing?
I'm good, man. How are you?
Yeah, I'm good. Long time no speak.
I know. Little do the listeners know that we talk regularly and pretty much every day, about four or five times a day, planning stuff for the podcast and just general discussions about life, eh?
Exactly. And then today we were guests on another podcast, which was nice.
Yeah, it was. First one we've done together.
Yeah.
Officially.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, so it was really nice, man.
Yeah, it was good.
You know, we're getting a lot of contact from people now wanting us on there, and it was, the word's spreading that there's a male fertility podcast, and we've got something to share and to say.
Exactly. And you know, that's our aim summed up there, that the word is spreading, because it's about getting that word out there, getting that support out there. So yeah, it's all good. And as we are, we haven't really got much of an update really, apart from that everything's well. We're in the new year now, everything's started up and again, and you know, up and running, and here we are.
Yeah, things are great. We had a bit of an up and down week in terms of kids not being too well and stuff, but hey, it comes with the territory, doesn't it?
Hasn't affected you though, machine.
No, we're going, mate. We're going. We keep going. We don't stop. You know, alarm still goes off at 5 o'clock, and I still get up and I go to the gym.
Nice.
Even if I've only had an hour and a half sleep, because that's what it feels like some days.
I've started at that new gym I was talking about now. It's a bit like CrossFit-y. So I'm splitting my time between like weight training and doing the odd kind of class with them. But I go at 6 and then come home, get in the ice bath and get going. I love it. Like, we've got into this before. I'm not going to spend too much bath again. But like, literally, when I'm in there, it's dark. It's 7 a.m. I'm getting in 4-degree ice water.
Yeah.
It's really incredible. And I've got used to it quickly. I've acclimatized. I can control my breathing within about 20 seconds now. And I stay amazing. In up to 5 minutes now. I've got up to.
That's amazing, mate. And it's just like those small steps. When you first get in, it's a proper shock. But actually, like, you just breathe through it, don't you? I was scrolling Instagram the other day and I came across a Joe Rogan. And he, where he lives at the moment, that the air temperature is colder than the water. So actually getting in the ice bath was warmer than the air temperature. It was mad.
that's quite common with the sea. I get in the sea quite often, even this time of year. So the sea is at its coldest in England around March, when it goes down to about 9 degrees.
Yeah.
If you think of the air temperature in March, I mean, this week, it's been, I think they said on the news last night, it was the coldest night for 14 years. So it's weird because you're getting into something, and it's still cold. Don't get me wrong. I'm not saying you're getting in the sea and it feels like a warm bath. It's not. It's still cold water, and it like immerses your body and it sends your blood rushing to your vital organs. But that's part of the healthy thing of it. It's kind of like giving you a flush out from all of your nerve endings and stuff. But it is weird when you get out of the sea or get out of my ice bath, out into colder air, but you're feeling like good, you're fully like, I'm always red from the neck down from it, but yeah, it's
like a good,
anyway, let's but then honestly, then getting a warm shower after, it's exhilarating, and to do all that before my family's even woken up, it's just incredible. It's like, someone was asking me about it on Instagram the other day, and I said to him, yeah, it's all about eating the frog early, and he said, excuse me. I said, oh, there's a saying called, I wouldn't know it verbatim, but it's, if you have to eat a frog, which is obviously going to be a horrible thing to do, it's best to get it out of the way in the morning. First thing, because then you've done it, you've got that accomplishment, and what could possibly be worse for the rest of the day than eating a frog? It's a silly saying, but
I'll take your word on that.
Yeah, I've never eaten a frog. No, I suppose I've had frog legs in France, but and because that's the thing, like, say you're trying to develop new habits, for example, like the gym, or you want to incorporate a bit of cold water therapy, if you think, well, I'll do it tonight, or I'll go to the gym after work or whatever, and you don't really want to do it, you've got that. You are then wrestling with it all day. Yeah. So then it's that increased kind of dread of it. It just builds to get up, get it done, and just smash it out. And then you're done. And that habit then stacks, because that you, if, for example, it is fitness, what you want to incorporate in, you do it early, and then you're more likely then to carry on good habits throughout the rest of the day, like we're eating and stuff like that. And I'm sure this is probably something you talk about all the time with your clients.
Yeah, it's definitely is. It's about getting it done. Oh, when you're fresh, it means that you've done it. There will be no excuses. We've all been there. Like, you have the best intentions to do it after work. I'll do that later. And then you get tired, or you have a bad day at work, or something goes wrong. And it's easy to make the excuse.
Yeah. But the world always wants you. It wants your attention. It wants your energy. And when I say the world, is people in it, or social media, your phones. So if you can get up and do it before the world has taken over, before those emails are coming in from work, before you're scrolling on Instagram or whatever, which is addictive, and that's why we are programmed to pick up our phones first thing and stuff. But if you can battle against that and have no distractions, just do what it is that you're setting out to do, whatever your frog is, get up and eat it before the world and all of its wants can take over.
Yeah,
there's real power in that.
100%. And you've achieved before the day's begun, and it's a powerful, powerful thing. I also, my favorite time of the day is the morning, like when no one else is up. I used to do a lot of running first thing in the mornings, and I used to get up at 4:30 and go for a run. And people think, oh, that's early, you know, you're mad. But that was my time. It was my time before the world wanted a demand on me. And quite often, like, I crawl into bed at 9:30. So actually, I still get my sleep. You know, I just don't stay up till 11 or 12. I get down, get my head down, because I prefer to be up in the morning.
Yeah.
But I think that came from knowing what I needed, and I've kind of crafted that. And I think that kind of brings us on well to our topic today. And that is acceptance and mindset. It's a very important topic. And I know it's one that's, you know, quite close to your heart in terms of the mindset type of things and the acceptance. You've talked throughout this podcast and on other platforms about how you went through quite a journey of acceptance, which has kind of led to where you are today, isn't it, buddy?
Yeah, exactly. And like, not only did it, that perspective shift and that mindset shift get me through the infertility, but it's now essentially what I'm making a career out of it, in like with my coaching and helping other chaps who are also going through it, get through to the other side, and not just get through it, not just survive it, but really push on and become a better version of yourself, because that's what I became, was stronger and more resilient. And that's exactly what I help guys do. And I'm sure I'll probably touch upon how that I do that within the episode. But I mean, essentially, when it comes to the overarching element of acceptance, that is the last phase of grief. Like, so we've touched upon in the previous episodes how we were grieving going through infertility struggles, which is completely natural. And the kind of classic five steps of that being acceptance being the last one, the other four in no particular order being denial, blame, anger, depression. And I said before how I kind of flitted between all those, and I was being dragged into them often. And we actually, I said about a new diagram that I found, which was completely true, and that, you know, they're the five classic signs and symptoms of grief that we go through in the stages. But I found a diagram before where it's got a lot more, like numbness, shock, fear, disorganization, panic, loneliness. And we talked about that before, but, you know, there is a lot more to it. But taking that that classic, those five, which I think were developed by Elizabeth Kubler-Ross, that's from the memory bank.
That rings a bell. That rings a bell, because I've done reading around it as well.
Yeah. But I mean, I found with the first four, they were interchangeable. I was being dragged through them. Sometimes I didn't know what it was at first, which, not to go over old ground too much, but I was just angry and I didn't know why. I was pinning on other things at work. But once I kind of realized that I was going through something and as I started to find out that it was most likely grief, because again, you don't attribute grief to fertility struggles at first, but then it's realizing that it is a massive loss. Acceptance was by far the hardest thing to reach, because ultimately you are accepting a new reality, and that is hard. It's really hard to get there, and it takes a lot of action. It takes a lot of very willful and courageous action to get there. And I think for me, I did two aspects of getting there, really, because what I realized, what I acknowledged, was that along with what I was losing in terms of my ability to pass on my DNA, my and have biological children, I was losing a lot of my identity, a lot of my self-worth. And so at first it was like trying to rebuild that. And you do that, I think, certainly how I did it was by asking myself some really searching questions. Like, you know, who am I? That's huge. You know, who am I? Who am I to others? Who am I to my wife? Who am I to my parents? Who do I want to be as a father if I get there? What are the best aspects of me? What are my strengths? What are my weaknesses? What do I want to develop and push on with and eradicate as well, like kind of past behaviors? And when you really start asking yourself like searching questions such as that, we don't, like, how often do we do that in normal life, if you know what I mean? Like, it's only when you go through something huge that you really do that.
Yeah, it's, you know, I heard you talking about it the other week for the first time, about how you kind of looked at it like that in detail, and it brought a completely different view to me in terms of how it was approached. I think a lot of men think about what they're going to lose, you know, in certain areas, like whether, you know, with your fertility, what am I losing? But actually, the more important question is, what do I want to be? What do I want to get out of this? And how can I move forward with it? Because it is what it is.
And for me, this isn't like, it wasn't a one-stop shop. It wasn't something that, I mean, this is the first time I did it, to get through a life-changing event and a very traumatic event, but I still do it now, every day. You know, I'm years down the line. And so I have this app where I write down every day. At the end of the day, I do reflections, and I'll bring up my evening ones. So I develop these myself. It's literally three questions. Did I make progress towards my goals and visions? Was I the husband and father I want to be? And what could I have done better? So every day I write that down, and it's all about being brutally honest. And you know, sometimes it's hard. I mean, like, sometimes it's very positive. Like, for example, I'm just looking at one here. Was I the husband and father I want to be? Yes. Now I've gone into what I did that day, but then what could I have done better? Got up earlier. You know, but that is every day is that reflection. But this, I had to do this on a big scale to kind of it's just like I had the layers of my own onion all peeled off, and I'm at the core. It was a chance to really take a close and a long, hard look at myself and establish, like, for the answer to those questions, for example, who am I, being the big one. And once you start answering those and you really, really realize, get an idea of who you are, you can then start reapplying those layers like a coat of armor, then becomes a shield. And it's like, right, if I can own this, and that's what it comes down to, is real ownership, then no one has got anything on me. Like, this is, and I had this, like, all the time, this other voice, which was, I call it like my inner Goggins now. Have you, you know, David Goggins?
Oh yeah. Who's going to carry the boats, buddy?
Yeah, exactly. Like, absolute lunatic. Like, you know, he does 4,000 pull-ups Guinness World Record thing. But so I've got this inner Goggins, and he's always on my shoulder.
Yeah.
And what he was saying to me at the time was, who are you, like, what is holding you back here? Like, who are you bothered about this? Because what I realized was that a lot of the times I was bothered about other people's opinions of what I was going through. And I heard this quote once, and it, you know, as life-changing as my diagnosis was in one respect, this quote was life-changing in others. And I don't know who said it, I have to apologize to whoever coined this, but it's, I'm not what I think I am. I'm not what you think I am. I am what I think you think I am.
Yeah.
So essentially, it's, we live our lives worrying about what other people are thinking about us. And I realized that a lot of what I was struggling with was based on what I thought other people were thinking about me or would think about my infertility. And that was a real kind of light bulb moment, because firstly, like, why am I basing my life judged on what other people, I'd perceive other people to be thinking about me? And secondly, it was a realization that generally other people, other than, like, you know, your close loved ones, really aren't thinking about you anyway. We think that the world, the life is the movie of Sean, and that everyone else, it's like the Truman Show, that everyone's watching me, but they're not. Everyone's got their own worries, their own concerns, their own problems, and they're not thinking about everything that I'm going through. You know, your closest family, your closest friends, of course, are, because that's why they are there. But Fred from the office or whoever, you know, they're not thinking about me as much as my ego is telling me they are.
Do you know, this is amazing, because we've never really talked about this kind of topic in loads of detail. And it's the same for me. Like, I had this almost like an epiphany at some point where I was like, I'm trying to please people or convince people that I'm okay, when really they couldn't give a shit. Like, the person who walks past you in the street, the person who hands you your prescription, the person that you post that little sperm sample through in the letterbox because you've got to do something, they don't care. They don't care who you are. And it's a kind of real realization. We all walk around in our own little Truman Show and no one cares.
Yeah, exactly.
It's a big thing to kind of get your head round. Like, you have an interaction with someone, and before you've left their vision, 9 times out of 10 people have forgotten the conversation. And it's like, think about how many thousands of people I've probably interacted with through my whole lifetime. The only people I can name and can tell you I have are people that are directly in my life. Everything else doesn't matter. So it's an incredible thing. And I distinctly remember having that thought. I am trying to please people that don't really care what's going on in my life. What I need to do is focus on me and the people in my life, which is exactly what you've just echoed, mate, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, that inner Goggins was great, really, because there were times where I needed the more, like, kind of therapeutic ways of, like, digging deep and really getting to the crux of who I am and asking myself questions and pondering the answers and writing them down as well. I found that very helpful. But then there was other times where I needed Goggins in my ear just going, like, stop being a little bitch. Like, you know, if you've heard him on podcasts, that's exactly the words you use, but just sounds a lot cooler and harder than what I did say it.
Well, as you say it and chuckle at the end, I don't think Goggins chuckles. No, I don't know if that man can laugh, mate.
You know, as soon as I said it, I was like, I'm not even convincing myself here.
No.
But no, I'm definitely not Goggins. But, you know, ultimately that's what I was saying to myself. But it was, you know, I was asking myself questions, but I was telling myself stuff as well, like telling myself, this does not define you. This is not who you are. This is, you are not now going to be known as Sean the infertile man or azoospermia Sean or something. I'm still Sean. I'm still a husband. I still want to be a father, and I know I've got so much to give. And ultimately, it came down to a choice. And, like, this is the hardest thing that I had to deal with, was acknowledging that there's one choice to be made here, is, do I let it consume me? Do I let it take over my whole life forevermore? Or do I just go, do you know what? Fuck this. Fuck infertility. I'm moving on. I'm moving on with you like in spite of you. And actually, if I can, and you know, I couldn't have said this at the time, but I remember thinking, if I can, I'll thrive in spite of this. But it was just about like, fuck this, I'm off. Yeah. I've been dealt this hand. I can't trade it in. This is the hand that I've been dealt. There's no redeals. There's no shuffles or whatever. I'm not a gambler. I don't know the terms, but this is the hand I've been dealt, and I'm going to play it the best I can.
Got to switch to a state of mind which will push you through things. And they openly talk about, and I've read several books on the topic. These are normal guys. They have normal thoughts. When they wake up in the morning and it's snowing and they got to go out for a run, they don't want to go out. It's cold. It's horrible. But it's taking the control, knowing that if I act upon this, I'm taking that control. I'm not going to let external factors affect me internally. And that's an incredibly hard thing to do. Like yeah. It is. I think from a society point of view, we are set up in a way now where, although, you know, we talk about our mental health and it's important to be open and honest about it, we are also set up for the easier option out sometimes, and that's to ignore the issue in the room. Mm-hmm. And I found that it wasn't until I took note of that issue in the room, which was my fertility and was my mental state around that, it wasn't until then did I start getting better.
Mm.
You know? And part of that for me was going to therapy and talking, because that was almost like the door was opened. I still had to step through and climb the 1,000 stairs in front of me.
Yeah.
But that was the first step, which, you know, it took a lot of, you know, it's going to sound a bit big-headed, this, but it took a lot of courage from me. It took everything out of me.
Yeah. Mate, it's not big-headed at all. I think it's the first thing I said is acceptance is willful. You have to will it. You have to take action, and it's courageous.
Yeah.
And you've drawn upon it there, our old friend talking, because it's a theme that runs through all of our episodes, because it's the thing that got us both out of a hole. And neuroscience has proven that talking shifts the blood in our brain. So when you're in fear and anxiety, that activates the amygdala, which is the part of our brain. It's only about the size of a walnut, but it has so much power. It's the part of our brain that is all based on fear and anxiety, and it activates the fight or flight reactions that we have. Mm. It's long established. It's been there since we were men, you know, like man was man, and we had to have it, because if the bushes were rustling when we're out on a hunt, when we're cavemen, it's likely to be a lion. That's what that is. It's like, that's what sends tingles down your spine to get the fuck out of there.
Yeah.
But we've got that now in this modern age. It's still there. We haven't evolved it out. We still need it, because there's still risk in the world. But what we are exposed to now is a lot more stuff that triggers that. And like you said, you know, we live in a comfort crisis. We go through this life now, and it's easy. Life is generally quite easy. We can get food delivered to our door at the touch of a few buttons. We can do what we want, watch what we want, travel around the world. You know, this is all within reason and within means, but we live in a very comfortable world with comfortable beds, comfortable duvets. And when something and when unchosen suffering hits us, and it will, it gets everyone. There is no one that goes through life all fine and dandy. But when unchosen suffering hits us, is how do we get out of it? And how do we build that resilience? And that's exactly what you touched upon is earlier as well. It's like getting up at 4:30 and doing something you don't want to do. And it's building that self-belief back up. And for me, and I'm really hesitant to talk about it because it's become such a kind of a wanky theme, but cold water was something that really helped me. I started doing cold showers when I was in the deepest of pits of infertility. And I think I just read about it, about kind of, yes, there's health benefits, and everyone knows that like cold is better for your sperm than like hot tubs and saunas, etc. So there's the physical side, but I read about the mental side of it, and it's doing something you don't want to do. And I started doing 10 seconds at the end of my shower, and then added on 10 seconds each time. And then I got to the point where 2 minutes was the absolute bare minimum that I'd do. And I did it every day for 18 months without missing a day. And not one single day did I get in the shower and think, I can't wait to do that cold shower. And I'd quite often be talking myself out of it. Like literally, that internal voice is, not even that. Before I've got in it, I'd be like, don't worry about doing that today. You've done X amount of days in a row or a year in a row or whatever. Don't worry, you've earned enough to have a day off. And then it's funny because this is genuinely, maybe I'm just mad, but this is what happened in my mind. Then my mind would go, right, you've said that now. There's no way you're getting out of this. You are doing it. And this is genuinely conversations that I'd have in my mind. And so I'd do it. And I never once felt worse after doing it. It's all that kicking in before, that doubt, all that fear. And, it's horrible doing it. But once you've done it, it's exhilarating because it releases endorphins and you get the dopamine from having done it. But that is resilience building. And that, accompanied with other aspects, like I was saying, like kind of the inner work is where, like you said, it opens the door, or it's the first step. You've still got 1,000 steps to go, but talking, and guess what, it's huge, but it doesn't work on its own. I think you still have to take a lot of actions. Talking is kind of like key, but on its own I don't think is enough. It's about positive action moving forward.
Yeah, I think there's, once again, I think it may be a society thing. A lot of people talk about things, but actually do what you say.
Yeah.
I always say to people that say sorry to me, right, sorry about that, I didn't mean to do that. I say, don't say sorry, just don't do it again. If you say sorry and then do it again, the sorry means nothing.
Yeah.
But if you say, do you know what, I am sorry about that, I won't do it again, or I need to do this next time, and you actually deliver on it.
Yeah.
Actions speak louder than words, don't they?
Absolutely.
And it comes down to that, an action is taking control.
Yeah.
Talking is valuable, so valuable, and the important first step, but actually taking action on those words is almost sometimes harder than actually the talking.
Yeah.
Because you get used to saying the same thing. This is how I'm feeling. This is how I'm feeling. Okay. Well, what are you going to do about it now? And we talked about previously about how men have that kind of mindset, isn't it? I've got a problem. All right. I need to fix it.
Yeah.
If you hang around in that, I've got a problem, and just talk about it for too long, you're stalling and you'll end up feeling worse.
Yeah.
You have to identify the problem. And as a man, we have this natural ability to just want to figure it out and fix it, which obviously with male fertility or fertility in general, it's easier said than done. With some, it's not possible. But for example, you, mate, you had your diagnosis, you could have sat there with that information and not done anything about it, but actually you were proactive and used your own knowledge and your own motivation to push yourself through it, and what was next for you. Okay, I've got this information, what's next for me? Really powerful thing. So talk about it, but actually act on it. And that takes time. Like, I'm not saying it's as easy as going, I've got this issue, this is what I'm going to do about it. It's about that processing.
Yeah, exactly. And that's exactly what I work with my clients on, is that processing and the action and the sustained progression as well. Yeah. Because you couldn't have summed it up better, but it's one thing saying you're going to do something, it's another thing doing it. And that's often like just in the first session I'll be talking, for example, and getting to know them, and often it would have taken so long for them to come to that point of talking. It is like a release, and it's great. And you could see people's physiology change when they're finally unloading. And then it's like, okay, right, where do we go from here? And that's what I work with guys. And it's getting to that point, is getting on that stairway. Again, to bring it back to your analogy, that those 1,000 steps, you can literally only take one at a time and let's do it together. And I'll be there to hold you accountable and guide you along the way and keep that onward progression, because that's men. We need that. We need forward progression. When, you know, human beings, we're about 66% water, might even be more.
Yeah, what we are 60-odd% water, yeah.
Yeah. And what happens to water when it stays still? Gets stagnant.
Stale, mate.
Yeah, exactly. So we are, as humans, we are developed and designed to make onward progression and keep getting better. And it's like something like this, like infertility or, you know, any trauma is, it's like a heart attack where the heart stopped beating. It's in that fibrillation state, but you need a defibrillator to give it a jolt and like, okay, let's get it going again. Let's get back in that river, get pumping and progress, because everyone can do it. Like, you know, we're proof of that. We know so many other men that are guys I work with, guys you work with. You can not just get through it, but you can thrive in spite of it.
Yeah. And it's an amazing thing. Like, I've talked to thousands of men now, and ones that have been through it, you get some that really struggle with it. They always will, because, you know, it is such a tough thing. But a large percentage of guys that go through it, they do thrive at the end. They're like, they become a better version of themselves.
Yeah.
But when you're in their trenches, like, you can't see that. You can't see, you know, you can't see over the trench.
Yeah.
I described it as feeling like I'm face down in the mud and I just can't get up.
Mm.
You know,
yeah.
To the external world, I'm maybe not smiling as much, but inside I was fucking dying, mate. I'd had enough.
Well, I'll come on to that point in a minute, but to go back to your trench analogy, and I'll pick that one up and run with it, but that's great, because okay, so you're in the trench, and then when you get to the point where you get to the top, you will not make progression by looking backwards. You have to then move forwards. What's behind you can't change. It's happened, and then it comes down to the choice and to, you know, run with that. It's forward, you know, you just you go, and that is where healing is. That's where acceptance is, and that's where growth is, and that's what I slowly found my way to. And, you know, we're talking here in what's probably be a 45-minute podcast episode, but we are both summarizing years of pain. So we're not trying to diminish how hard it is, and we're not saying that it's easy. You have to do it. It is hard, but what we're saying is that it can happen, and it will happen if you allow it to, rather than just staying in that state. I want to pick up on that second point you said, because you're saying, like, you know, you're out smiling and being Kieran, but then what's beneath the surface is really struggling. And that is, it's like an iceberg. You're showing that bit above the water, and everything below is being attacked. And again, that's what I had to readjust and work on myself, like when I was going through it, because essentially what we're presenting in, like, public and to our friends, to our family, that is the all the above the surface stuff. But what goes into it is our beliefs, our kind of our coping strategies, the things that we've been told by parents, peers, society, and that has molded us into who we are. Mm-hmm. But actually, sometimes that's really detrimental, and often it takes something big in our lives, like saying unchosen suffering, whatever kind that is, it takes that for us to really then have to take stock of what our stuff below the surface is and how we readdress that and cut out those repeating patterns of negative behavior, those negative thoughts, just like a loop. Because whatever you're thinking and feeling, that's what you're doing as well. And that's what cognitive behavioral therapy is all about, about breaking that chain, putting in new thoughts, feelings, and new behaviors as a result. And that's where your new thinking comes from, and your new habits, and it just goes around, and it is self-perpetuating, and it's all about getting to the real crux of who you are and readdressing and eliminating the negative points, because we can all change.
Yeah, I think that's a really powerful thing. Like, everyone can change. There's very few people in the world that are broken enough, or so broken they can't change. And, you know, their fertility will be the least of their problems, I expect. But if I was to say, what would you have done? I'm going to ask you a little question because I'm quite intrigued. What would you have done if a 28-year-old Kieran had turned up at your door and needed some coaching? And I was just like, oh, mate, I've had enough. I'm done. I need some help. Help me get out of this hole. What's the first thing you would have said to me in terms of, is there a specific program you'd follow with me, or is it a case of seeing what I need as an individual? How would you look at that to get the right answer for me?
It's all about you. It's not about me helping you, of course it is, but it's not about me trying to influence you at all. I would be asking you questions like, okay, so what is it you haven't had enough with? Why have you not had enough? Like, you've got, and sometimes it's, you know, I have to ask challenging questions and challenge your perceptions, because again, it's you'll be in that negative loop there if you get into that point of thinking you've had enough.
Mm.
Well, why? And it's, you know, it's quite hard to give a really full answer to, you know, that limited information. But like, you know, we could do almost a dummy session. But
I'd
need more information from you about, okay, what is it that has led you there, and start to look for the clues about what I feel it is that will lead you out of it and how we can progress forward from there.
Yeah, because it's something that was the external thinking that went on in my head. It was like, what have I had enough of? Like, what is wrong?
Yeah.
And you know, I got that through my therapy and through my counselling. I think it's something that often men really struggle with, is that first bit of the puzzle, isn't it? Like trying to find it. And just having someone help you, guide you, is a phenomenal thing.
Yeah. Well, and that's what I do, is by and large, everyone knows the answers themselves, but cannot find them when you are stuck in this jumble in your head, and you've put on these layers of masculinity and of like telling your other half that I don't need help, I'm fine. And suddenly when you open up, and that's where like the answers are, really. And I help identify those and build on them. And again, it comes down to your self-worth and your self-belief and reapplying those and not just the old Kieran, the 28-year-old, but, you know, is building Kieran 2.0 and really giving you the tools that you need. And that by and large, most people have, but it's just about realizing that.
Yeah, it's that element of just being overwhelmed, isn't it? Because when you are overwhelmed in any situation in your life, you can't see it. I've experienced it, obviously, in my own personal life, but it's the same thing as when you're at work and you've got 1,000 things to do and you're trying to figure out what to prioritize. You know, it's just a different situation. But it's the same kind of thing. Obviously, work stresses are quite often are very rarely as serious as what we've gone through and what we've expected, and they don't last as long.
Yeah.
It's that kind of, I'm just kind of trying to give it an example of what you could relate it to. That feeling of being overwhelmed is unbelievable. It just comes. It goes down to the layers, though. It almost, like you've talked about, you know, we are an onion. We have so many layers, but being overwhelmed can also have so many layers. You know, so I'm overwhelmed about my fertility, but at the same time, I'm overwhelmed about my work. At the same time, I'm overwhelmed about the external people's external opinions of me. You know, of a matter we've already discussed. You know, they don't really care, but you're kind of honing in on that. It's another layer.
I've had guys come to me for like about fertility struggles, but then I've ended up working with them mostly on work projects, and because, like you're saying, there's layers, and actually once you address one thing, then often there's something else to move on to, and what would actually be the biggest stressor right there and then. And it's about firefighting, like, and putting it, like, compartmentalizing everything, which is often very hard to do,
yeah, but
allowing people to do that and giving clear strategies for work moving forward. And it's, you know, it just gives you a massive sense of perspective as well when you've got something as big as this going on, and you, like, now, like, people say it, it's just like, what's it, don't sweat the small stuff.
Yeah.
Like, God, now, geez, like, it's, I'm almost too blasé about anything, because, you know, like, I just have such an overwhelming sense of perspective of, that's a load of bullshit, I don't need to worry about that.
Yeah, I think I have a saying at work, like, people will say, do you hear about this? And I was like, no, it doesn't concern me, I don't care.
Mm.
I only concern myself in things that concern me. And it's not just the work, it's everywhere. Like, if someone said, do you hear what's going on over there? No, I don't care. Like, yeah. But I think that's come from what I've been through, like, and my realization and my understanding of the world. You know, people are very nosy in terms of they want to know what's going on, but actually they don't really care.
Mm.
So it was kind of, oh, well, why would I waste my time finding out something that doesn't involve me?
Yeah.
If that makes sense. Like,
oh, absolutely.
It's a very powerful state of mind. And I don't think, if you know, I know you've gone back 10 years, I would have been like, oh, I want to know what's going on. I would have been in every single pie trying to figure out. But my experience has taught me to believe, or taught me, yeah, to believe, if it doesn't concern me, I'm not getting involved.
Yeah.
So if you, I mean, this has been a great discussion, mate. Like, we could literally talk for hours about it. And I do feel that it's a topic that we're going to come back to. I think the whole acceptance topic is fascinating in terms of the stages of acceptance and just kind of different situations, how you might get to that. So, for example, how you came to accept donor sperm would be different to my experience of exception, because I was accepting something else. It's kind of like completely different situations, but a similar topic. So it'd be interesting at some point to talk about those, overlap those.
Well, yeah, because it's ultimately, first of all, I had to accept my infertility before I could then move on to even consider donor sperm and accept that. So yeah, each time you're hitting new levels, and ultimately, by doing something and overcoming such a huge barrier, you are leveling up. What was previously your ceiling of thinking that is, you know, how do I get there? Suddenly you go up a floor and becomes the basement, or the ground floor of the next level up.
Yeah.
And you have that proof then that you can overcome something, and it's your, that's where real self-belief comes from, is knowing that you've overcome something so big before that the next challenge, you've got this.
Yeah. So, like I said, mate, I could literally talk for hours about it. It really fascinates me. But to kind of bring it to a conclusion, what would you kind of say to people that are listening to this that are maybe struggling with acceptance? How could they help themselves at least take a step towards to acceptance? Like, is there like a little couple of hints, tips, just things that you would kind of look for them to be engaging in to maybe help them accept something?
Yeah, well, I'd say first of all, it's trying to shift that thinking from that state of fear and anxiety. And like I was saying, by talking and opening up, and even if the first step of that is writing stuff down, like in a book or on your phone or whatever, because it changes the state. And you start, when you see, for example, with writing, when you see your thoughts written down and looking back at you, suddenly you start to make sense of them a little bit more, and realize that, of course, like, none of us asked to be in the situation, but with any terrible situation, there's also opportunity, and there's an opportunity for you to discover really who you are, and really to discover your inner strength. And that's what I'd urge anyone to do, is start looking inward. Because like we said earlier in the episode, when do we ever really do that? And this is the time where you need to do it, and you'll be surprised at just how much positivity comes out of that, and realizing just how important you are within, first and foremost to you as an individual, but then to your partner, to your family and friends.
Yeah, man, it's great words of wisdom there. I think, you know, we've talked about it before. You've been through it. You've experienced it. Thanks, man. Like, generally, there'll be guys out there listening that will want to say that to you. And they can. They can contact us and thank, or just a general conversation if they want to start up those conversations. But I'm saying to you, cheers, buddy. I've enjoyed this conversation. It's important for the guys to listen to.
Yeah, thank you, mate. Thanks for being my partner in crime, because, you know, this is, you're keeping me accountable. You know, this is why we do it, why we keep turning up. And I couldn't do it without you.
I do have a question for you, though. Who's Batman and who's Robin?
Oh, that's
maybe the listeners can decide.
I think we'll have to take this off air, but I don't know. I think my attempt to paraphrase David Goggins earlier clearly put me in the Robin category.
Man, no, I've really enjoyed it today. So I think that's a good time where to bring it to an end. I mean, we will cover this topic several times, and I'm sure with different people, we're going to start having guest series too. So we'll bring people into this discussion. Thanks for listening. If this episode has helped you, do us a quick favor and leave us a review. You don't even have to use your real name. Every single review helps another man find this show when he needs it the most. It's honestly the best way you can help the next guy. If you've got a question or something you'd like us to cover on the mailbag, drop us an email at themalefertilitypodcast@gmail.com. We read every message and we love hearing from our listeners. And if you'd like a bit more expert guidance and support from other men on the same journey as you, you're welcome to join our free private community at nexusfertility.com. It's totally confidential and designed just for you by guys that get it. For our latest updates, follow us on social media at the Male Fertility Podcast. And remember, gents, you're not on your own.